With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right, Matt. Jerry's here.
Jerry Cantrell.
Hey, what's up, dude?
How are you, man? I'm doing very well, mate. Very, very well. I'm thrilled to have you on my show, so I really appreciate you taking the time to do it, dude.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry I was late, man. Thanks for making it work for me.
Well, I've been doing the show 5 years, Jerry, and I've wanted you on since the start. So what's an extra hour after 5 years between friends, right?
Yeah, well, you know, to wrangle musicians is like herding cats, right? So,
well, I know you don't do of these either. So,
I'm not the only one you run into.
No, and to be honest, you know, I'm guilty of it from time to time as well. It does happen. So, yeah, all understanding and forgiveness here. And I know you don't do a lot of podcasts, so it means the world that you're doing mine. And I've been down the Jerry Cantrell rabbit hole over the last couple of weeks in the lead up to this chat. And I heard the two podcasts that you've done over the years with Dean Del Rey. And I love Dean. You know, I've had quite a bit of correspondence with him over the last few years because we have a lot of the same guests on and going back and forth. But yeah, he's a great dude, a great host. And I really enjoyed the two chats that you've had with him over the years. Am I right in thinking he actually went out on the road with you as well, like opening up Before Chains, doing comedy?
He did. Yeah, we've had a few of our friends who are comedians come out and open for us on tour. Dean's funny as hell. I actually was just up in Seattle a couple weeks ago and saw him and Marin do a show, and it was sick. They're both awesome. Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, I've seen all Marin's specials, but I've never seen him live. I'd absolutely love to. What's his new show looking like? Is it good?
I had never seen a live show of his either, man. It was really good. It was really, really cool. You know, he's got that edge that you expect, but you know, there's a real, real playfulness and humanness to his routine. And Dean's just, you know, he's on fire. It's been fun watching him grow, you know?
Yeah, well, it's been amazing watching him grow as a podcaster as well, because like me, he's a completely self-made dude. You know, he doesn't have a producer, he doesn't have like a media team around him. It's just one guy getting out there doing everything. And then he goes and lands like the first ever, I think it was the first ever in the world, AC/DC podcast with Brian and Angus. And they went to him before anyone because they'd heard of his show. They knew he was a fan. And that for me is just like, that's a testament to hard work, isn't it? And talent and graft. Here's something that I've noticed. I had Lanigan on my show recently, and I think something that which doesn't get kind of talked about enough is a lot of you Seattle dudes just have great senses of humor. You know, I know kind of the art that a lot of you dabble in is, you know, heavy at times, but there seems to be a real lightness of spirit. And an amazing kind of almost British, like self-deprecating humor. A lot more so than people from LA and New York. There seems to be a lot more of a kinship, I think. Would you say that's fair? Is that what you would agree with?
Yeah, I think, we share a little bit more than longitude or latitude and weather.
Yeah. That's probably sure. What it is, isn't it? Just like gray, dreary, rainy all the time. So you need to laugh to get through those days. So you're like, oh God, it's raining again. When you were coming
our
up,
sarcasm
in that...
is a highly prized and wielded weapon. Yeah.
Well, when you were coming up, obviously pre-internet, when you guys are away from music industry towns like LA and New York, did it just feel like you were kind of, you know, almost left unsupervised to just do your own thing and, you know, have fun making music with your friends? Did it feel like you were, you know, kind of just free in that sense from a lot of the bullshit that sometimes comes with the business?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's probably like that in pretty much any town, maybe with the exception of like the super, super entertainment hubs. But, you know, I'm sure it happens in these towns too. You don't know you're ever going to be able to do something like this for real or be an artist that makes an impact, but you have a dream, you know, you have the dream and you've been inspired by other artists who've done it. And, you know, somewhere along the way, you fall in with the right bunch of guys or gals and you start marching forward and see where you can go. And our town was full of that, you know, we had, we were all within probably a few years of age of one another, you know, it was like, we were all kind of like the same generation, you know? And everybody I knew was in a band or went to see a band or worked for a band it was very musical, you know, and at that particular time, you know, we are kind of an outpost, you know, a bit up on the corner there. So yeah, that probably had something to do with it, but you know, I put it more to the people and, the people involved wanting to make that happen and the pursuit of trying to write good tunes and be a good band, you know. You had a lot to look to, you know. There was a lot of motion, you know, in that direction. So it felt good to know that you were part of something. It's hard enough to, you know, just kind of get a band off the fucking ground, but you know, when like, you know, not, you know, 9 or 10 other ones are doing it pretty well locally. You know, you know what I mean? It's, give you a kick in the ass, you know? So, and I'm sure we did that for each other, you know, kind of, subconsciously, you know?
Well, that was what was super cool about that time and that place is all the bands were so different. And often that happens when there is like a local scene is bands might get lumped together, but actually they sound nothing alike. And there's that kind of just individuality and idiosyncrasy and originality with each band that I guess, as you sort of allude to there, spurs the other ones around them on to be more unique, more like themselves, better. And then you kind of elevate each other together. Could you feel like the energy and the momentum building as, you know, bands are beginning to take off? And it must have been such an exciting time place to be a young upcoming musician, but could you feel that momentum as it was happening, like riding that wave?
Sure, absolutely. You know, we were all like, you know, 20-year-old kids, you know, and just turning legal to drink, you know what I mean? So hanging out in the bars, playing shows and you know, going to each other's gigs and stuff. And, you know, you definitely knew something was happening. There was already, you know, some of the bands had done like independent records on independent labels you know, you could feel it building. And it was kind of a short period of time. We formed in 87 and we put our first record out in 90. So, it was, you know, looking back at it, it wasn't that long. And, but it was exciting. You know, it was really exciting. Like, there's no way we would have thought it would have turned into what it did, but, you know, we all really dug what we were doing and you could feel like something was working, you know? And, it's also kind of a sense of community, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of that is from pre-internet era. I think I've found with a lot of people I've spoken to is like you had to just go out and find your kindred people, didn't you, before you could go just connect with them at the touch of a button. And I think there's obviously a lot of good things that have come from the internet, like the fact that we're getting to chat right now. But I do think that before that invention changed everything forever, there was definitely like a, I don't know, you could kind of take active participation in the process of discovery and exploration. And you obviously came up way before even cell phones were a part of touring life. So you kind of just had to make it up as you went along. You can Google anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was most definitely a different time, and you know, life is constantly in session, and things do always change. So, you know, we've definitely seen some things change over the last three decades plus. But you know, what remains the same, is you know, I still love making music. You know, I still love the guys that I'm in a band with. I love our city, and I'm a big fan of all of the music. They're all good friends of ours from where we sprung from, you know, and we're part of the bigger worldwide community, you know, of musicians and artists, and that's pretty great.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be a part of it. And what's kind of, for me, my favorite thing about doing this show is the research element. And I've been listening to Alice in Chains music my entire life. I'm a rock and roll DJ, so every single weekend for the last 15 years, I've been playing Alice in Chains music. But in the lead up to this chat, I really just dived in deep on the three solo albums, not just the new one, but all three. They all sounds kind of unmistakably like you. They're all unique unto themselves, and each one offers, I think, slightly different qualities, but they all sound so unmistakably like you and so fucking great, dude. And it was a real joy just going down the rabbit hole with all three of them over the last couple of weeks in the lead up to this chat. And I guess I'd like to ask you, before we get into the newer solo record, is the first time you do anything solo, is that for the Cable Guy soundtrack? Am I right in thinking that, or have I been misinformed?
Let me think about that. Yeah, probably that sounds about right.
And how
what year was that?
I think it was 96. Okay. It was around that time.
Sounds about right. Because Boggy came out in 98 and Degradation Ship was 2002. So yeah, that probably sounds right. I remember talking to, Judd's he's just a cool dude, man. And a real big fan of music, and he makes amazing films. We partnered on a few projects where we were, he asked us to put some music into his work, that was a really fun project. Sean and I did that. Did a little video for it too, if I remember correctly. But I haven't heard that tune in a bit. But a few folks have asked me about it recently. Greg actually Pichotto was actually asking me about doing that one, maybe on this tour.
Amazing.
You're probably right. That was probably the first thing I did outside the band. Yeah. I think in the early days I wrote a song and kind of did a, yeah, I think you're right. I just woke up. Yep.
The coffee's just kicking in. No, it's all good, man.
I need one more. Go ahead.
That Cable Guy film was so good, though. I remember at the time it was kind of a little bit shocking for people because Jim Carrey had obviously done all these kind of like PG, family-friendly, you know, very mainstream comedy films that were all hugely successful. And Ben Stiller, obviously, as well, was known for these kind of, you know, super palatable, accessible movies. And then here come these guys. Obviously, Judd wrote it, Ben directed it, Jim in it, and just a dark film. I think it's aged incredibly well, though. And like that scene in particular when he's doing the fucking Jefferson Airplane karaoke. Don't you want somebody to love? It's so good.
Yeah, that had a nice dark bent to it. You know, there was kind of like there was a lot of filmmakers kind of putting a little dark twist on some things, and I love the idea of it. I remember I had that song laying around, you know, Leave Me Alone, and you know, I couldn't have planned it any better that it would be like a song for that soundtrack, because that's the whole thing. The guy just won't leave Broderick alone.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And I watched the other night, just sheerly by chance, before I even knew I was going to be talking to you, before we locked this in, but I watched Jerry Maguire because, you know, one of those movies, for whatever reason, I'd never, ever seen it. And he's going to the photocopying place in the middle of the night. He's printing off this pamphlet and there's a guy behind the counter. And I go, that dude looks familiar. And it's you delivering one of the greatest. I mean, there's two lines, but the latter half of that, you know, double line, you got to hang your balls out there. How did that opportunity come about and how much fun did you have doing that? And honestly, like, sometimes you'll see a musician appear in a film and they just look a little bit out of place, like they can't quite carry themselves in that environment. And you just seem so at home. And I know it's only a very short performance, but it's so memorable and perfect. And you just absolutely knocked it out of the park. I thought it was so good.
Well, Cameron is, you know, he's got a long history of connection to music, and he's just a wonderful filmmaker. And you know, when he was with he was married to Nancy Wilson, and we were good friends with Hart, and that's how we met. And you know, Seattle's not that big a town, and yeah. And it's pretty hard to not know somebody. you know what I mean? Because it ain't that big. But I remember he was talking to, we had done the single soundtrack with him and done a couple of live performances. So we had a relationship, and then, he didn't tell me what he was doing, but I remember hanging out with him a couple of times and he was asking me, what's it like to be a Jerry?
like, amazing. Like, some research. Like, what,
like, give me some nicknames. Like, what, give me some, what is it like to be Jerry? Come on, tell me. Like, we had a couple of discussions over beers or what it was like to be Jerry. And I know I knew why a little bit later, because the character was Jerry Maguire. But, I think he had a laugh put me in that movie. He's like, I just wanted to fucking see Cantrell and Dockers in a time. You know what I mean? So he put me in that scene, and you know, I'd never done anything really like that before. It had been kind of, you know, part of an interest of mine in school, you know, like drama and acting and stuff like that. So, but you know, I'm used to having a guitar strapped on me and a mic in my face and a bunch of screaming people and a loud amp behind me. So it's a different deal. You know, just shooting those two lines took like 4 or 5 hours from different angles. And it was really, really kind of a trippy process watching how meticulous it is and how many shots you need just for that, that little amount of time in a film. But, Tom Cruise was really cool. It was great hanging with him, and he and Cameron kind of pepped me up a little bit, and we ran it down, and it turned out all right. It turned out
better than all right. You killed it. As I said, I know it's only a short moment, but you just absolutely killed it. It's so good. There's this kind of great twinkle in your eye as well. Like, I don't know where your head was at when you were shooting it, but you kind of just look like this. This kind of stoner, far out figure that you expect in roles like that, like dreaming of being anywhere else. Yeah, well, but the
character was Jesus of Copy Mat. Yeah, I'm the guy that he comes in and has this brilliant idea, and I tell him to go for it, and his whole life falls apart, but then he finds himself at the end. So it's kind of funny.
Are you friends with Monique Powell from Save Ferris, Jerry? It sounds like a random question, but the reason I ask is she's a good friend of mine, and I remember a few years ago she posted a picture on Halloween. I think she was with Greg Hetson, and she was dressed as Poison Ivy, and you're there as,
oh, yeah,
as Lebowski, as the dude. Yeah. And you just had that look, right, down to a T.
Yep, I had my dude costume on. Yeah, Monique's great. She's cool.
Has that been revisited since that year? Because if that was mine, that would be coming out of the woodwork every single year, man. It's like, it looks like the exact same cardigan from the film and everything. It was perfect.
Kind of funny. I was like, I kind of had the goatee and my hair was growing out. You know, from when I'd cut, whacked it off a few years ago, and mm-hmm. I think we went to go see the Dead Kennedys or something in a club on the road somewhere, and I was wearing like sweats and kind of a raggedy old shirt, and I was with my guitar tech, Scott Dockraden and a couple of guys. This dude comes up to me and he's like, "Oh my God, the dude's watching the Dead Kennedys." Like, that's Jeff Bridges. Like, this guy just was convinced that I was the dude, you know, like fucking Jeff Bridges and stuff. And so we had such a laugh about that. Scotty was pissing himself. So we got on the internet and pulled up a couple of Big Lebowski outfits, and we just pulled them right up. There you go. That's one in the plus column for the interweb.
But, yeah, right there. And
got it sent out in a few days, and so I got a lot of use out of that outfit. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Amazing,
that Pendleton sweater is killer.
How do you and Tyler Bates first link up? I had him on the show recently. Great guy, and one of the most impressive CVs in music and film, and what he does, he's just, you know, there's very few, if any, better than him. How do you two first connect?
Well, I met his wife, Lisa. We don't live too far apart from one another, and just kind of walking around the neighborhood, and I was out walking my cat, actually. I told my cat to walk on a... And he used to... his name was Harold. And that little guy loved the truck, man. We could take him up on a up in the trails. I'd go on, like, miles-long walks with him. So I was walking Harold. Apparently, I was walking by Tyler's house, and the garage door opened. They were all walking out as a family, and it scared the shit out of Harold, so he bolted and got himself out of the harness and disappeared. So
so there you are looking for Harold.
I met him and then had to find my cat. Yeah, but I knew he was out on tour, he had just gotten back, and Lisa was saying that we should meet, and we've been friends ever since, you know.
Well, it seemed like, you know, because you'd had quite a big break after the second solo album, obviously, you know, you got Chained back together and you're touring regularly and you're busy with all of that. And so then, you know, 15 years all of a sudden have gone by. And was the John Wick thing what kind of got you back in the studio for the first time in a while and got those old solo material, you know, kind of mindset juices flowing? Was that what that was? Was that the catalyst for that?
Yeah. You know, it was all part of... you know, it's good to be creative, you know, and, you know, every member of this band has done projects outside the band, and it's a completely normal and healthy thing with pretty much any group of musicians. And you've got a kind of a shared quest and a goal and a sound, and you know, there's plenty of room for expression outside of that. So, Tyler said he was doing this movie asked if I wanted to do a song, and it was just a kind of an organic thing. I'm like, yeah, okay. So we sat down and started going through some ideas, came up with the structure pretty quick. And I, you know, he put a mic in front of my face and I started fucking singing some melody lines. That's usually how it always starts. Words are always kind of the last thing. And I'll just kind of do mumble lyrics, but the melody lines come pretty quick. So we just kind of sketched that thing up, probably within a day or two, and did it for that movie. Gil Sharon, who's on this record, Tyler and myself. Yeah,
it's an amazing film, that one. All of them are. They're so just, you know, entertaining and visceral, and the music's always great. Again, obviously, because Tyler's got his hands all over it, and he's just an amazing all rounder, isn't he? And so has he played on the new album as well as, you know, produced it all and done all of that? Is he like playing on the record as well?
Yeah, he did. He actually played the two shows that I played in L.A. In the middle of the kind of writing process for this record. Did a couple of shows in December of 19, and he did those shows with me playing guitar. And on this record, he does some percussion, some strings, plays a little bit of bass and a little bit of guitar. You know, he's in there, you know, but mostly, you know, he's just a really great producer. You know, he's got a real pure idea about what music is and how it should be made. And, you know, he sets a good table. Let's put it that way, to be able to work, and clears a bunch of crap off of it, and that's a sign of a good producer. And he also keeps you off balance a little bit, and you need that. You know, you need somebody that's gonna, you know, every producer I've worked with has that in common. You know, questioning you, pushing you, you know, like you know, putting, making you a little uncomfortable, you know, even maybe getting you pissed off from fucking time to time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get a rise out of you, get a better performance, or maybe make you think, maybe make you see something that maybe you wouldn't see if you weren't in that state, you know, in a more comfortable state, I guess. So, it's good. It's really good. We have a good friendship, and we have a good working partnership as well, you know.
And is Duff doing bass on most of the record, a couple of tracks? And like, I mean, that dude, he's such an, not just a rock and roll like hero, but he's such a great ambassador for the Seattle scene as well, isn't he? And I've met him several times, and he's just an absolute geezer as well. Just a great, great guy, really down to earth, super talented, badass. Is he on the whole thing or just a few, or which ones is he on?
I think he plays about five tunes, five or six, something like that. When we sat down to do this, I think he only intended, of course, I wanted him to play the whole record, but
yeah, yeah. But how would you not, right?
He's got other fish to fry, and I think I initially asked him to come over just to listen to a song or two, and I sent him a bunch of demos and you know, songs, and he picked out a couple. And he came over and sat down, and we kind of went through them, and they sounded so good, and it kind of fit that I asked him to do more, and he did, you know. And it was a really fun process, though. You know, I respect the hell out of him, you know, being a master of his instrument and just being kind of the malleable musical force that he is. He can go with you anywhere you want to go, you know, and he can take you places you've never been, you know. You know what I mean? So it was really fun sitting down with him, because we were, you know, when I do demos, I used to do the demo bass, and, you know, occasionally I'll come up with a decent riff, you know, like the beginning of Wood or Stone or whatever. You know, there's been a couple occasions where the demo bass line is actually pretty fucking good. So I've been paid the honor of having the bass player I was working with play it, you know. And he's like, man, let's do a Frankenstein on a couple of these, because I like this part of yours and I like this part of yours, and I got ideas for the rest of it. And so we just kind of we sat down, hit the record button, and then when we get to a certain part, we'd pass the bass back up. He'd hand me the bass, I'd play a little bit, and I'd hand it back. There's a couple songs that are kind of Frankensteins of Duff and I. And on Siren Siren and Dismembered, I played bass. Yeah.
Oh, dude, Dismembered is, I think Dismembered and Prism of Doubt are my two favorite songs on there. I think the whole album's brilliant, but those two for me, I don't know what it is. I can never quite vocalize how I feel about music, because I don't play an instrument myself, so I can never quite reference the exact technical things that are going on that draw me in. But I mean, maybe you could tell me, as they're your pieces of art, what do you think it is about those two that maybe stand out to some of the other songs on the album? Maybe I can try and figure out here and now with the man himself what it is that draws me in.
Well, I mean, sometimes it doesn't have to be figured out. It just, if it makes you feel and it makes you think, and like, what the fuck is it about this thing? You know, what is it about this song? You know, like, that's a sign of a, it's a sign of a good tune, you know. I mean, Siren for me, it's so visual. It's really sexy and lush, you know. And there's a real kind of a, you know, burning ember, you know, power to it, and you know, it kind of explodes now and again. But yeah, to me, it's like a little mini movie, you know. And it's funny because it's not the same movie every time. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's also a good sign, you know, about a song, you know, when you, it makes you think of different things instead of some just straight up linear kind of, you know, storyline or whatever. It's it's kind of wide and open enough for you to take it a few different ways. So it's cool.
Well, there's a couple of key. Go on, sorry. What are you going to say, Jerry?
Dismembered is just fun. You know, it's just a fun. It's a fun tune until it gets to that kind of left turn twist in the middle, where it goes from major to minor. I love that part. That's such a you know, what the hell moment. And I love doing that in music. I love taking the unexpected turn or the unexpected downshift, you know, like, whoa, hey, you know, and I love doing that. I love music that takes me on a ride like that. And I've always tried to use some of those lessons and directions of my craft, you know.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, here's one thing I can say, and this isn't an original observation, but all of your melodies since day one have, you know, just been so haunting and beautiful. And I was reading, and maybe you can inform some more information on this, or perhaps tell me I'm wrong, but you were in the choir as a kid, right? And so some of your early musical influences came from the like Gregorian ancient chants that you'd hear in church. Is that like too much of a leap, or is that an accurate assessment of what happened? Because when I heard that, I was like, oh, it makes sense. Like listening to that music, there is this kind of like ancient, gnarly, you know, mystical element. Is that where that comes from? Did that stand out to you as a kid hearing that stuff?
It did. It did. It was a big influence, you know. You know, my first stage experience of performing for people was not with a guitar. It was standing on stage with a bunch of other folks, you know, as part of a group singing, you know, singing and acting, you know, and, it was cool to have that. That's, I guess that was where I put together, how much of a kick it was to be totally terrified to stand on a in front of a bunch of people looking at you and wanting to scream, "What are you looking at?" and run off the stage and then perform your bit, actually have them respond, and like how good that feels, you know, like it just feels so good, you know, not only that you got a response out of them, but you felt like you did a good job for yourself, you know, and that's a worthy pursuit, you know, it's a worthy pursuit to be involved in letting people kind of put everything on hold, or, you know, take a minute out of life and kind of just enjoy something, or let down, you know, celebrate, relax, you know, have a shared experience with people that you might never hang out with in your life, but you can all do so there, you know, and it's great, you know.
Yeah, there is something magical and unexplainable, and people have it in religion and sports and music. I think they're the key three, where you're in these huge spaces, whether they're indoors or outdoors, and you just tapped into the same source of energy, and you're all kind of riding the same momentum, and it's true magic. I feel like it's where we're most reminded that there are these kind of supernatural elements to the human experience, whether or not we want to admit it in day-to-day life. When we all get together in massive communal gatherings like that, I think it's you know, it's so tangible, you can't deny it.
Sure. You know, the lack of it over the last 18 months, you know, it's has been, you know, we've all been dealing with this, you know, communally worldwide, and, the change that this little virus has brought and the grinding to a standstill of life, you know, and, I mentioned that comedy show I went to, with Mark Maron and Dean Del Rey, and, you know, sat there in a group of people, you know, we're all masked up and everything, but that was a little, you know, that's a little unusual, but that's what we have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I laughed my ass off for like, you know, 2.5 hours. And like, there was a couple moments in the middle of that being part of the crowd, like laughing so much that I almost started crying because mm-hmm. I realized how long it had been since I'd sat with a bunch of people and had fun like that, you know, in that sort of an environment, you know, like it almost brought me to tears a couple of moments, you know, and it felt so good, you know, but I was also aware of not only what that meant to me, but what that has meant to everybody else to not have that access to that a lot, you know, over the last 18 months. And so I really look forward to next year getting on a stage and being able to do some shows again and kind of make that connection and have fun, you know.
Yeah,
back to life. You know?
I DJ'd a festival about 3 weeks ago, and it was my first like big scale gig back, and I didn't hold back the tears, Jerry. I let the tears come pouring out of me, and it was so overwhelming and such a profound experience. And it's like you say, it's like, oh my God, you don't know what you got till it's gone, and you miss it for so long, and then when you get it back, I mean, you're in for a treat. So have you not played a show post pandemic yet then, and is it going to be next year for you when all of that ramps back up again?
I have not. I don't think that I'm going to play any shows until March. You know, we start touring in March in the States. We're looking at some dates for Europe and UK over the summer, and
awesome.
There's some stuff going on in the fall too. We'll be locked and loaded and ready to roll next year. Hopefully the virus lets us do that.
Yeah. Well, touch wood and fingers crossed and all those other cliches. But yeah, it does seem, I don't want to jinx it for the world, but it does seem like we're through the worst. But I guess the last 18 months have taught us that anything can happen, can't they? So
I think we're heading in the right direction.
Talk to me about William. That dude is not only an immense talent, but just such a cool motherfucker. And he, you know, it must have been pretty hard for him stepping into those huge shoes, but he rose to the occasion. Where does that friendship start? And at what point did you realize that's my guy right there?
We became friends when he moved to LA, and I was staying down here, and we had a mutual friend that introduced us, and you know, we just kind of hit it off, started hanging out, and when I was in the middle of making a record, Degradation Trip, and you know, we'd had the chance to jam a bit, and we went out and did that tour, you know, for the Degradation Trip, so we not only was I playing some playing my material, but playing Alice songs as well that I'd written. And you know, we fit really well together vocally. And I've always been a fan, and it's kind of like a fan of and two singers or more singers in a band, you know. And it's something that's kind of a hallmark, I think, of the music that I've been involved with. I've been lucky enough to kind of develop that kind of a blueprint, if you will, you mm-hmm. know, with Lane and continue with William. And on this record, you know, it was really fun having Greg in the mix too. Greg Pucciato, from Dillinger Escape Plan.
Yeah. He's amazing.
It's, you know, I love you mentioned it earlier. That's the thing, harmony, you know, and I love bands that, you know,
two guys or three guys could carry lead vocals in a song, and it's all interchangeable. And, you know, it's kind of like a one plus one equals three scenario.
Yeah.
Will's cool, man. He's really talented. You know, he put out a record a couple of years ago too, before all this happened. He's been doing some stuff with the GTO guys and you know, it's been fun having him in the band.
What's it like when your voices do interlock in that way? Can you explain it, or is it almost unexplainable? Because harmonizing in that way, not just sonically, but it's like your spirits collide. And it, as you say, one plus one becomes three. It becomes something else, something bigger. Is there any way you can vocalize what that feels like, or do you really just have to be in those moments to know what it's like?
Well, it's always worked. You know, it's great being a part of an ensemble. You know, everybody plays a role. You know, this band wouldn't be what it is without any of the six of us, you know? So, there's like a chemistry. There's a chemistry of maybe the things, maybe the, you know, the parts that you don't look at all the time. It's easy to look at the singer or the guitar player. You know, a lot of people your attention isn't drawn all the time to the drummer or the bass player. And, you know, all six of us were completely necessary and integral to how this band sounds. And we all wear different, you know, we all take turns putting our hand on the wheel, you know what I mean? So, you know, I know Sean can sing, and I know Mike can sing too. I've heard them both do it, but they won't do it live.
Oh,
which they would, because I like that whole Beatles Queen thing, man. That could be pretty badass, you know, like add a few more voices to it. And I've always been a fan of you know, harmony, like we mentioned earlier. So it's something I'm always playing with, you know, and there's always a third and sometimes a fourth harmony, and it's just a real, real free form thing. And just feels natural. I'm glad that we have a musical fingerprint, I guess, you know, an identifiable fingerprint that's uniquely us. You know?
Yeah. You mentioned your second album a moment ago. Was that when you had basically Ozzy's rhythm section, Rob Trujillo and Mike Borden? Was that the album you did with those guys?
Yeah, Trujillo and Borden did Degradation Trip with me. They took the Degradation Trip with me. Yeah.
And did you have to ask Ozzy, like, can I borrow your guys? How did you pry them away? And it worked so well for that record. Like, that album is a lot heavier than the new one, and that's neither bad nor good. It's just different, and I actually think I prefer the newest one. But that second album is probably the heaviest of the three solo albums that you've done, and I guess a part of that is because when you play with guys like that, it can only go that way, right?
Yeah, you know, when you know, everybody that's involved in making a record, especially the players, you know, they're gonna influence how the thing is gonna turn out. You know, and they're gonna add to it, they're gonna elevate it, you know, I deeply appreciate and respect those guys, and I love them to death. And we every once in a while we'll be in the same place at the same time, the three of us, and we talk about doing a D-Trip reunion.
Amazing.
Doing just a handful of shows. So I would love to do that. Yeah, I think I just caught them in a window when maybe Ozzy wasn't working, you know. So, like,
and they were dialed in. They were used to working with each other. They were ready to go. Yeah, just perfect timing, man.
Yeah.
Who's been some of your favorite people? Because you jam with some incredible. Have you ever jammed with Patton? Have you ever played with Mike Patton? Would you like to? If you haven't,
never have, but I would love. Yeah, that guy's sick. I saw the Bungle shows where Scott Ian was playing with him here.
Uh-huh.
Here in L.A.
Lombardo,
Lombardo. Yeah, man, Dave is so cool. You know, Dave actually was involved early on in the process of this record. He and I did a little jamming with Tyler, demoing a few of these songs out. Dave Lombardo and another buddy of mine, Brian Lee Brown, and James Lomenzo are three guys that that are not on the record, but they are part of the process of the making of this record. And so, but yeah, Patton's sick. You know, I love how versatile he is. The energy that he has, he's got so many different voices, and I don't think that he's ever satisfied, and that's why he keeps swimming so fast, you know, and it's just amazing to see the notes and the different art that he puts out. I also took a little bit of lessons out of his book on kind of going it alone and making indie records. Greg Puciato, is good buddies with Patton as well. And he's also had experience doing, kind of independent records and kind of running everything out of your little mom and pop store instead of like a record label sort of structure. So that's another really interesting feature about this record, is it's my first independent record completely. And, I definitely took some notes and, some guidance from Greg and Mike Patton through Greg as well in that department.
Yeah, I guess, you know, X amount of years in, you can still take these kind of new risks and have new experiences. And the creative industry is, I think, quite unique in that sense, isn't it? Is if you want to just keep doing new things, you could do new things continually for all time. Like, that scope is there, as you say, both creatively and in the business approach.
Well, it's changed so much. I mean, a record company used to be a really integral and important force. I mean, for as much as they were fucking ripping you off, you actually got something for it. You know what I mean? So, like, mm-hmm. you know, they really had a push and a worldwide organization, and especially like radio play and MTV and all that stuff and local promotion. And, we had a good experience with our label. You know, Columbia and Sony were, you know, Don Einar and Peter Fletcher and Michelle Anthony, Nick Terzo, we had a pretty good experience with our company and it was on a longer time scale of developing an artist and, you know, sticking with an artist. I don't know that that really exists anymore. You know what I mean? So,
yep.
Technically it does, but is it really necessary? I don't know. I'm finding out by kind of trying something different. And, so far it's been going pretty cool. You know, the Mark and Samantha at Velvet Hammer are running a great campaign along with a bunch of other really talented people we put together. And it's been kind of fun just kind of running it out of the shop, you know, instead of having anybody else in the way of it, you know. And, it's been kind of satisfying on that front too. Yeah. I think in life it's important to remain teachable, you know?
Yeah. And hopefully if it continues to go well, we will maybe see loads more Jerry Cantrell solo albums. And
yeah, hopefully it won't take me 18 years. I don't know if I got 18 years left.
Well, mate, I've enjoyed listening to all three of them so much over the last couple of weeks. One thing I did want to kind of touch upon as we approach the end is your love of country music, because it seems like since the start of your career, you know, you were never afraid to delve in the kind of heavy pond, but then also strip it back too. And that has to come from blues and country music. Is that a musical form that has always been in your life? Did you grow up listening to it? And is it something that's always kind of informed and inspired you as an artist?
Yeah, it's in there. You know, it's a chunk, you know, it's a chunk of, what makes up the fabric of me, you know. And, both my folks were big country music fans. And so, you know, it was always on the radio, driving in the car and at home and stuff. And, we weren't a family that went to concerts or anything like that. So everything I kind of, digested came through the radio or the TV, you know, and, or the turntable, you know, or tape deck. And, it was kind of cool that way in retrospect, but yeah, you know, like all the great classic country, you know, Willie Nelson, Hank Williams, Merle Haggard, you know, Ernest Tubb, Charlie Pride, Charlie Rich, there's so many to mention. Patsy Cline, Tanya Tucker, Loretta Lynn, Dolly Parton, God, what's the guy? Dolly's partner. Why can't I remember his name?
I don't know.
I forget. Yeah.
Well, there's the kind of like a sadness, isn't there, to that storytelling as well? Like they are able to take life stories and condense them down into 3.5 minute song, which in itself is this great skill. But then there's just this kind of just emotion that bleeds in the music, and it's so authentic and so sincere and so timeless. And you did mention Willie Nelson there. Am I right in thinking you jammed with him, or what was the link with you and Willie?
Yeah, I was invited to be part of a record called Twisted Willie, where they had kind of a bunch of rock bands or whatever doing Willie Nelson tunes. And so I got to do a song called I've Seen All This World I Care to See. And, I remember, meeting Willie in Austin. I think he was playing a gig down there, and I got to go on the bus and play it for him. And he was kind of blown away by the fact that I, picked that song, you know? And he's like, yeah, that's not really a, where the hell do you hear that song?
It's a deep cut.
You know? And, he's like, yeah, that's a heavy track, man. I wasn't really in a good place when I wrote that tune. And I'm like, well, I relate to music like that, that kind of has an edge and hits, you know? And he's like, well, you did a good job. So that was fun.
Yeah, I don't think there's any such thing as depressing music. Whenever I play sad songs, people will kind of go, oh man, don't put this on, this bums me out. And for me, sad music elevates and uplifts me. You know, if I'm in a bad place and I hear something that's relatable in that way, and I hear, oh, there's pain in this thing too, for me, it has the reverse effect and actually has a really positive, uplifting, empowering effect. I don't think there's such a thing as depressing music. There can be like music that's so bad it's depressing perhaps, but I don't think like sad music can make you sad, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know, there's some people make films about, you know, certain subjects, some people make films about other. I guess that's something that I like about country music. And Porter Wagner, fucking knew it would fucking come to me in a sec. That's it, Porter Wagner.
Yes. I was going to go George Jones.
Yeah, well, you
no
know,
idea.
55. Not all of me survived. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Most of me's here, but Porter Wagner. Yeah, fucking great singer. Yeah, you know, sorry, I got a little distracted there. Country music and music in general, you know, it does touch on elements of sadness, but it's also resolute and celebration too, you know? So I think you need the whole enchilada, you know, you need the whole enchilada. And I prefer not skipping the dark bits, you know what I mean? So like, I mean, that's the drama in the story, you know what I mean? I love music that has elements of dark and light, because that is life. You know, they're inseparable and necessary to one another. And any good story is not all yay, yippee, killer, I'm the best, I won. You get kicked in the balls and on your ass, knocked on your ass, and you know, things go to pot, and you get back up, and then good stuff happens too. You know, so I don't know. I've always been drawn to music that has that heavy emotional element. And I guess I think that's pretty evident in the way that I write and the songs that I've written, if you listen to them. But I think it would be an oversimplification just to call it that, you know, dark and heavy. It's not, you know, it is those things, but there's also elements of light and hope and perseverance and celebration in there too, you know, so.
And as you say, in a nutshell, that's life, isn't it, right there? It's all of it, the full spectrum. You can't have one without the other. Perhaps you wouldn't want one without the other either, because you only get to truly appreciate the love and the joy and the good stuff in this world when you've made it through the bad. Jerry, this has been such a treat, and I am just so happy that, you know, we finally got to do it after 5 years of hoping that our paths would cross. they sort of have through a, you know, a telephone connection. And I've really enjoyed myself, and I hope you have too. And just want to say a big thank you for taking the time to do it. And just congratulations on another amazing record, a ridiculous canon of incredible art.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you listening. And once again, I apologize for my lateness. Thanks for making the time for me to get on the show.
It's been a pleasure, mate. A pleasure and a treat. And yeah, I look forward to hopefully seeing you over here in the new year. Take care. And yeah, good luck with all the rest of the interviews and stuff. And thank you again for taking the time. Really appreciate it, dude.
We'll get over there one way or the other next summer, for sure.
You have to get in a little inflatable dinghy and row over.
one way or another, man. Make it happen.
Nice one, Jerry. Have a great day, dude. Take care.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.